Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Today we are here with Mr. Elias. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good.
Thanks for being on. I want to hear about all this great work that you're doing. Let's just start off with just a brief introduction. Tell us about yourself, how you got plugged into all this amazing stuff you've been doing for, gosh, many, many years now.
Yeah, hey, man, I'm older. I've been around for a minute. Nothing wrong with that. What up, y'all? My name is Elias Moreno-Lothi. I'm a lifelong educator whose practice is rooted in abolition and fugitivity. And most of the work that I do is around collective liberation and working on student voice and climate and culture work within schools. And that work has been happening over the past 20 years. And then I moved out of schools and institutions and started doing that work in community about 5 years ago. And that work in community is very similar to the work that I did in the schools, where we're organizing and working on student voice and what youth voice looks like and how we can make a difference. And so a lot of the work is just really about creating opportunities for youth to figure out what they're passionate about, what they want to do, what to get connected to, and then organize around those ideas to make them happen.
Yeah, so youth empowerment. There's so many threads there, and there are so many great things that are happening in the community. There are also so many not so great things that are happening in the community. You know, there's this almost like a teeter totter, right? You know, and of course, we're Prison Pipeline Collective. You know, so we're talking about that prison pipeline, and of course, really at the end of the day, the most susceptible people are the youth to the prison pipeline because they start as youth. You don't start it as adult in life. You start as a youth, right? So they're the most susceptible. And so how are we propping up the youth and supporting them? And I think you have some very good insight on that. So let's talk about a couple of things. I mean, you're involved with a lot of different projects, and you're also just very familiar with just kind of what's going on in a lot of these lives, you know, multiple lives that you've been around for many years, in public schools, in programs, institutions, facilities. And you know, what are the kind of things that you're seeing when we talk about this concept of this large prison pipeline, prison industrial complex? How is this basically preying on the youth of today?
I think that sometimes, like when we get into this conversation, it's really important to acknowledge the folks who kind of have led us in the work that we're doing. I started doing this work at McCoy Academy, which was an alternative school in 1999, off of MLK, man. And
I
when I
remember
came
that.
in, you remember that?
I
Okay,
do. Oh
okay.
my God, that's a long time.
I started off in that space going in and substituting, and I substituted in a sex ed class, and I was like, whoa, what did you put me into? What's going on here? I'm gonna come in and do sex ed with some folks. I don't even know these youth. And a beautiful story came out of that. I'm not gonna share that here, but within that context, like I had a lot of folks around me that supported me in understanding what this work meant in order to be preventative and support youth who were caught up in multiple different spaces and intergenerational spaces, things that were taking place where they were involved, either gang involved or family was gang involved. And so we had Uncle Rob in the spot. I'm gonna shout out Uncle Rob, because like if folks know, man, Uncle Rob was one of the first to really get down and support youth in a very dynamic way and create spaces to have the conversations that were hard to have and kept it real. Like I sat in a couple of spaces with him where he just kept it real with youth in a way that I had not experienced before, helped guide my practice in the way that I speak with youth. Brother Ascari, rest in peace to Brother Ascari. He passed 2 years ago now in 2023. But Brother Ascari taught me about bringing rhythm into a space, taught me about how the drum in a circle and opening up and inviting stories into a space would allow these youth who were experiencing so much to kind of open up and connect around what might be possible and feel comfortable sharing their stories. And so I just want to shout him out. And the last shout out is to Rob Ingram. Rob Ingram and me were working at McCoy Academy together. Many folks know Rob in this work and the way that he connected with youth and really built super solid relationships, but also was trying to look at the system and shift the system in the way that we were trying to move youth away from the school to prison pipeline. I name those men in my life because they're a huge part of the work and how the work continues. I don't believe any of us hold this work individually. It's community work. And those are folks who really helped me to begin to develop my practice and understand how I show up in the community. So you asked a question, you were like, hey, what does this look like? How is this showing up now in particular? I think that what I have noticed more than anything is a lack of ability to fully show up authentically and within your identity in the school system. A lot of the work that I've done was carving out spaces where youth could fully be themselves in an institution. So I was at Madison High School for a lot of years, and while I was at Madison, I dug in deep with the Somali community. I dug in deep with Spanish-speaking community, dug in deep with the Islander community. And most of the youth from these communities that I work with were involved in the streets on some level. And so really close to or maybe had interaction or were coming out of the system and into the school. And so I say that what I'm noticing right now is a lack of folks who really know what that experience is working with the youth within the school system. As budget cuts have happened, as multiple different things are taking place, there's been a push towards normative culture or white oppressive culture within institutions. And I feel like that has pushed away Black and Brown identities and made it harder for them to show up in those spaces. And when you make it harder for folks to show up in those spaces, then different choices happen, which means that you're more likely to be like hustling or moving in the street or not going to school. And if you're not going to school, man, we all know what happens. It's really easy to get caught up and get moving in a different way. And before long, it's a charge away. You in one bad situation and you get caught up, and it's really hard to come back from that. So I see right now a real sense of our institutions deepening the pipeline versus doing the radical work that needs to be done to shift away from that pipeline.
And there's all this stuff that happens in the community, that so many things that you're involved with, and all these community partners, and a lot of the people who you mentioned, who some of them are still around too, some of our mentors, and inside the facilities, inside the schools, you kind of mentioned it, you said budget. There's no money to do any of this stuff that a lot of the organizations are doing outside. They find ways to fund it, but the institutions don't have it, right? And then, I'm not going to ask you the million-dollar question, because it's probably just rhetorical anyways. Where's the money going? Oh, we got plenty of money for ICE and whatever the heck, this recent administration is doing to destroy, the planet, for one thing. So again, not to ask you that rhetorical question, but looking at what are those resources that we do have that we're helping to provide from the community, and then looking at this paradigm. I call it kind of a paradigm of deficit, right? Oh, there's no money for this, no money. Well, what the heck happened? Aren't we supposed to have the best schools and blah blah blah, to have these empowered youth, and so you talk about underserved youth. It's not just because they're it doesn't mean they don't have to be in a program. Maybe even public schools. I think sometimes we say underserved youth. Oh, they must be in some kind of situation. It's like, no, they just like everybody else, pretty much. They in school, people like there's some kind of special designation, which is really not, and that anybody's susceptible to it.
Yeah, man. I think that there are things that, like when you brought up ICE and the idea that they're hiring at $100,000 and a $40,000 bonus, and that money isn't available for schools or teachers. The idea that the continued concept of white supremacy through policing and utilizing colonialistic thought pattern around control, that this is the priority versus supporting, youth and families is deep. There was a report that just came out this week that we're the fourth worst, school system in the nation, here in Oregon. And those are things that are indicative of, the lack of support, like you said, financial support, that is going into the schools to be able to do the work. I think there are good teachers. I think there are good people within the system that want to disrupt what is taking place and want to dig in deeper. But also, like, as someone who's done that work within institutions for a while, you become targeted. If you're really about this work and you really want to do it, you know, you're going to become a target because people don't really want to see it take place, in my opinion. Like, they don't want it disrupted. They want to talk the language. They want to utilize that language. But when it comes down to it, my experience with Portland Public Schools is that it's, you know, very oppressive, very harmful environment that continues to do harm to our youth. And so if you're going to adaptively want to change that institution, at the same time, when it's pushing all of the people that I know that are doing that work deeply out, they're consolidating power and continuing to be able to cause harm and utilize oppression as a way of maintaining status quo because that's who they are, right? And I am not trying to individually call anybody out. I'm saying that as a system, it is rooted in colonialism. It is rooted in this harm. And you have to be able to understand that, you know, whiteness and the way that whiteness works and the toxicity relationship that it has to power, like, people are going to move with it because they can align and they can be in spaces of power and they want to maintain that identity in relationship to power. And what I see is a lot of people in positions who would rather put emphasis on that identity related to power than youth stepping up and being able to change that situation, right? Or being able to be, I don't like to use the word empowered. I like to think of it as, like, when youth begin to gain advocacy skills, they shift the paradigm. They're able to say, hey, I'm experiencing racism in this way, in this space, and I want to be able to address it. I want to be able to speak to it. And as they become more powerful in that voice, the system gets a little shaky because it's like, oh, we're not actually going to shift. And so people get a little shook about, like, what does that really mean? And then I feel like that's when things kind of shift within that dynamic. And then more and more youth are like, okay, we don't see us. We don't see people who we're either identify with racially, culturally, through lived experience. We may not see us in this space. So I'm not going to continue to be in this space. Or if I am, I'm going to be in this space in a way that it doesn't feel good to me. Like, I'm not able to, like, sustain in the space. I have to leave a part of myself outside and then go in and then pick that up when I come back outside. And I think that what that teaches a lot of our youth, and I'm going to give it up to the youth right now, that, like, they see through this. I have conversations with youth all the time that are like, I see through the way that this system is not functioning. And yet I'm being told to my face that I need to do this, this, and this, when I know in my body it's not working for me. So how much do I have to listen to folks trying to tell me that this is the way forward when it isn't? And I think, and not to say that it isn't for everybody, there's parts of this that are really important to understand, that initial push out is what leads to getting involved in the school to prison pipeline, because there is no identity space. There is no place that they can fully be themselves. And so if you're not able to learn about yourself or learn history, and now we're in this, you know, wild time of, like, I read yesterday, man, that they're forcing teachers to put the Ten Commandments up down south. And I was like, we're at a point where you can't teach history, right? You can't teach the real history. You can't talk about the genocide in Gaza. You can't talk about, you know, Black Lives Matter. You can't talk about trans folks and humanize all of us in the sense of, like, what's going on. So the epidemic is really about everybody being pushed into this othering that does lead to getting involved in spaces that you might get caught up with law enforcement. And now, for me, I think the biggest shift, Adam, is that, you know, we're seeing the funding that's going towards ICE, that's going towards police, that's going towards building prisons. So we're watching is, like, this massive pipeline is now being reinforced and made bigger for our youth, right? And so that part to me is, like, deeply, deeply concerning around, like, what's going to come next. And I feel like that's really our job as community right now, is to come together and create spaces, third spaces, fugitive spaces, where there's other options for youth to figure out, what does this mean for me, or what do I want for myself?
Your point's well taken. It's almost at, like we're at a point where it's like, even to say prison industrial complex is or prison pipeline is like an understatement, because it's almost like, yeah, like mega pipeline, or you have to keep like adding this like addendum to how crazy this stuff is getting and what it gets back to with what you're talking about. There's two things for young people, just younger people in general, youth, young adults, is that A, all we're talking about in these programs and how things are going down in schools is that they have had adults who are essentially continue to disappoint them, failing them with things. And and I think, but where it's almost like your job, sometimes is kind of to be part of that. No. Then the second piece, like on the larger aspect of it for the youth right now. So it's one thing to be disappointed with adults in your community at your school being let down on and off about, false promises, or we can't do this, you can't do that, da da da. And then for them to see the larger shift in the entire system with all the fascism that's going on that you're identifying. So it's one thing, you're already getting let down here, and then you're seeing like literally, kind of, not to sound overly dramatic, but it's like the country's kind of like continuing to like fall apart.
Yeah, and the thing about avoiding those hard conversations means that you erase people's humanity. And from an educational standpoint, I'm a big believer in Carter Woodson and fugitivity and how do we create space where the hard conversations can happen and be explored, because at this moment, we have to choose to see each other's humanity. And that's the way away from the pipeline. Like, that's the way that we build deepening relationships. That's the way that we say, hey, something else is possible. How do we get there together? And so for me, like, I think about, this system, and I think about how many of us now, like, I have so many, like, folks that I rock with that I've been building with for years that have come out of the institution that are now like, well, we're done. We know that the institution is not the answer. Where are the things that we can generate some kind of space to address this and move together? Because it's our youth. These are our people. The dichotomy and the energy of like authority, I'm not interested in the idea of authoritarian position or like we're community members. When I work with youth, we're a community member. We're on equal ground. Whatever they have to bring to the situation, like that's what they have to bring. And we're trying to find each other in what's coming up. So I think one of the things that I've mentioned is Ascending Flow. Currently I'm a program manager with Ascending Flow. To Lilo, shout out to Lilo for being a real one and doing dope work out in here in the community. And Talilo's someone that comes from it, man. He knows what the system is like and what it meant to navigate it and come out of it. And so when you're with folks who are passionate about saying, hey, this isn't the way, there are people who help me move out of that and find a different pathway, and you start working with folks and deepening those relationships, then there's alignment that starts to take place, and you start finding opportunities with different youth to try to provide another perspective, another way that they could possibly move. Through Ascending Flow, right now, like we've been able to do a couple of songs, work with some youth and create some songs and some videos that have been really, really, really dope. Really appreciate like their perspectives and what they brought to the songwriting experience. Something like new, brand new, never wrote a song before, never recorded a video before. They did this cut called Expectations, that's just super dope, dope hook on it. But just talking about like, like we have different expectations. Adults have different expectations of us. And what about where we're at? What about our voices and what we're feeling and what we're going through right now? And it's a cut. Like, I feel like folks stepped on it, up on it. The youth really did their thing. They wrote some powerful bars. And I think that that changes things. That creates space to think about things differently. And even with one of the youth that was involved in that track, I've been doing work in the schools around harm that has been happening, with that person and their family and the harm they've been navigating from Portland Public Schools. And so been in meetings and navigating and doing advocacy work around like, well, how could we look at this differently? What support does this young person need? How do we get there together to do something different? And those are the opportunities that come when you build together, when you do music together, or you're doing something creative together. Then the things that people are navigating, the harm that they may be going through, it becomes easier to talk about and easier to go and work with someone around like, hey, what do y'all want to do with this? Where are you headed with it? So I just want to acknowledge that number one, the creative process, being connected in spaces where you can fully show up as yourself, creates a space to consider your own advocacy power, your own voice, and what might be possible. And Ascending Flow is definitely a space where we're doing that with youth. And then, I mean, I just want to, I'll riff on that too, that like this latest project that we're doing is, a reimagining justice project with youth. We did a workshop for a month where we got down with youth around like, what is reimagining justice mean? Like, what does it mean to think about solidarity or what we can move in right now to move towards collective liberation? What are the concepts that are embodied in that, like sacred reciprocity and moving towards like a space of rematriation, right, to the land and connection to the land? We had some really dope, deep conversations with youth, and they developed some really powerful concepts. And those concepts then moved into a space of turning into a mural. That took over building. We took over building. Super fire, like dope, dope, dope work with a muralist here in Cully, a youth that I'd worked with actually at Madison before, who was going through this whole thing, who was navigating all of this, and we found ways to move together and to get to a different space. And now he's in a space to work with youth for them to get something up on the wall and talk about these things. So there's a lot of full circle moments that happen in this work because we stay connected. I don't work with youth and then like I'm disconnected with them. I'm in relationship with a lot of youth and families that I've been working with for years. And I value that. And I think that's one of the ways we break the pipeline. But specifically, this mural went up, super dope, for youth to see images and ideas that they had get up on the wall. And then that turned into a music video. We shot a music video this past weekend where the MCs that were involved in the project are talking about like, what does it mean to claim home right now, to claim a space of where we're in, and how are we practicing solidarity in this moment? So I think, as someone who kind of works in a space of vision and saw this project and proposed this project, a lot of times we have visions of things, but it's the relationships that help to make those visions happen. And mostly I want youth to be able to have that experience.
Can you talk about how these things happen as far as the nuts and bolts? And part of why I ask is, again, we talked a little bit about this idea of this deficit, what I call the deficit paradigm. There's no money, there's no money, da da da. And it's like, it's not that what y'all do in the community would be impossible to happen, but it's almost not possible because of the barriers. And part of that is money, and capacity. Now, part of it is the whole system itself, but I have a joke that I call it lunch money. The kind of money that programs in the community get from a grant, it's like, here's a shiny coin to do some big mural project, or something. Not always. Some grants can be generous, but then in some cases, like, they're trying to pull the money together in the community. This is like they can barely get the artists paid to even do it, but they still do it, Can you just talk more about how these projects basically kind of come together and just a little bit more about how people are engaging and participating as this a huge addendum for all the stuff that's not happening in actual institutions, which should have been happening in the first place?
What I do know and what I do experience on a regular is that most alignment that happens where funds are able to become available is in relationship to culture and identity. And what I mean by that is when there is a shared understanding of our value to each other, of our shared humanity, of our way of moving in this world, then we present things, we offer proposals, we offer ideas. And when those ideas are cultivated together with folks who are aligned, then eventually it's going to happen. And so what I've learned is that like we just got to build and we have to actively be participating in what we want to see happen and having those conversations. We will generate that possibility for it to take place because someone within the context of where we're at, whether it's our community, whether it's our state or wherever we're at, there are resources that are available to be able to do this work. In this particular situation with the Reimagining Justice Project, it's Reimagining Justice Cully. I live in the Cully neighborhood. I've been in Cully for, 20 years. I'm heavily invested in the community. We got a lot of violence over here. We have a lot of things happening in this community that are pretty dynamic. And we need to be rethinking about what might be possible here. And so I've been in relationship with folks over at NAIA, Faraya, Eddie and talking about this proposal for 7 months and saying, hey, this would be really dope if this could happen. What if we did this mural project? This is what reimagining justice is about. What happens when you stay with it, you stay with the vision and you stay with people and you stay building, eventually something gives, is my experience. And so when we talk about projects coming together, I believe deeply in the fact that we need to be rooted in community and we need to be listening to community and communicating together and building what we want to see together. So to give props again back to Naya, they're the ones who really were like, hey, we see that you want to do this project. We've been talking about it forever. What is it going to look like to make this happen? And I sat down with Eddie and Faraya and they were super supportive. I just want to like acknowledge them because, Ascending Flow and I Am We Advocacy, that's my business that I run here in Cully. They really stepped up and were like, hey, this is what we can provide. And it's that continued deepening relationship and having accountability, having awareness of what lived experience and cultural identities and spaces are coming up and valuing those together that creates some deep alignment for things to become possible. I also just want to say this on the flip side, there's organizational funding and then there's also grant money and there's foundations. I've been in quite a few conversations with folks who do this work in the last like months, and we're really understanding that foundations are becoming key right now because they're able to pivot. Now with grants, there's like, oh, you can't use this language. You can't talk about diversity. You can't talk about culturally specific. If you want to get this money, you have to move away from all of this language that is directly what you're doing and the work that you want to do in order to get the funds. So it's wild to be in a space of like, yo, now we're emulating that same oppressive white supremacy structure within the grant structure because it is what people say is needed or in this time in order to continue. And that is absurd. So we went after a couple of grants and we've been doing some things and moving in different ways, but we really haven't been going and changing the language. We've been keeping steady with the language and going to see how things move with that. I'm not super optimistic, but I do believe that there is still ways to utilize language that is supportive of the work that needs to get done, and that we can move in that way. But I do think foundations, my last piece on that is foundations, homie. Like you got to tap in with different foundations right now, especially if you know that what you're doing is making a difference. Now is really the time to plug in and make some moves and deepen those relationships with foundations that are willing to support what you're doing.
So you mentioned a lot of different resources, and one of those is NAYA, which is Native American Youth and Family Services in Portland. And then there's a lot of other organizations that in Portland that you've been and are affiliated with. So if you want to give like a roll call or something, or just what people
Oh,
should
hell yeah.
look
All
out
day with that.
for more information.
Yeah, so one of the things that we really do that's dope is we do You Heard. You Heard is young adults being heard. It is a BIPOC youth-led open mic that has been rolling in Portland for 3 years. Shout out to Andre Middleton and Friends of Noise. We originally partnered around this concept. And 2020 and coming into 2021, we were like, youth have been cooped up. They need a space to use their voice. And we were like, let's create a space. Let's go work with different community organizations and figure out how we can do this. Shout out Daryl Grant, Soul Restoration Project. That's where we started. Daryl's dope peoples. If you don't know about Daryl, man, you should go check him out. Through that process, we started working with Apano. Shout out, Britt and Jules at Apano for being dope partners. We go over there. We just did the open mic there last month. Naya. So we partner and we do up at Mamuk Tokati here in the Cully neighborhood. We do the open mic up there. Shout out Drea, who's super dope peoples, who brings us in amazing. Like she feeds folks, like, yo, auntie. Big auntie energy, like, yo, let's get folks fed while we're here too. So much love. Shout out to A Beat Happening and Jonas. We've been partnered with them and rolling as well. Ethos Music, we've been over in their space with Fire. Shout out Fire. Appreciate you and the work that you all are doing over at Ethos. Ascending Flow has been deeply in partnership and rocking with My Voice Music. We're about to have an office space over there next month. My Voice Music is a dope partner. We've been doing a lot of the workshops in their space. They're a huge part of us being able to do the work that we do right now. So shout out Amy, crew over there. Much love to y'all. World Stage Theater. Can't leave the Sims family out, man. Good people, good people over there. One of the only Black-owned theater companies, Portland World Stage Theater. They're always doing great work over there. So shout out to them and the way that they show up. And that space is one of our favorite spaces to be in. Had some amazing performances over there. I mentioned Andre and Friends of Noise. A Beat Happening is about to be opening up. That's going to be another dope space for youth to connect to and perform. Yeah. So we partnered with a lot of really amazing folks. Yhurt is going to be an Ascending Flow program. Super fire concept and really loving the direction that it's moving in right now as well.
All right, buddy. We'll keep up the great work. Looking forward to more updates when they're up and coming with all the great work that's ongoing. And folks, you've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our amazing guest and to Prison Pipeline Collective member Karen James for post-production. Free them all.